Nice Merrill Hodge terminology there. Factor back.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, where men of fantasy genius have realized,
hey guys, we don't need real football skills to dominate on the fantasy field.
Yeah! So slap on your pads and grab your helmet. Shit's about to get real.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Let's Talk Fantasy Football. I am your host tonight. My name is Nick Walsh, and I am here with episode number two of my good friend Matt Rogers. Rogers, what's going on?
Not much. Episode two will be just as good as episode one, I'm sure.
Yeah, hopefully. Unless you think episode one sucked, you probably already listened to it by this point, in which case it's going to be better. Either way, it might be better. But anyway, Rogers, we are talking about the second half of games for week two. If you haven't heard part one of this, go back and listen to it. If you hadn't heard the recap of week one, go back and listen to that too. You got a lot of things to listen to, apparently. Or maybe you don't. Maybe this is the only thing you have to listen to. But Rogers, before we get too deep into this, I do want to let everyone know that we are brought to you by Auction Draft. So while the NFL season may have officially kicked off, your hopes of drafting a fantasy team for 2018 is not gone. With Auction Draft, you can draft your team at any time, and you can have a five-week season with your friends. That way, when you pay too much for Le'Veon Bell, hoping he shows up, you get another shot to get it right in 5 weeks. And again, you can sign up now by going to letstalkfantasyfootball.com/auctiondraft. Use that promo code LTFF and save 50% on your league. So, Rogers, we have some teams to talk about. We have some games to talk about. It should be interesting. I guess let's get right into it. And so we're going to start here with Philadelphia at Tampa Bay. We just saw Tampa Bay do an extremely unexpected thing and hang 48 points on the Saints. Now they are going back home. Philly's still a 3-point favorite. The over-under is 44. So Vegas apparently doesn't think that we're going to get a repeat of the 48-40 game that Tampa Bay just played. Let's start on the Philly side, though. You would think that Foles would have to play better than he did last week because he played pretty bad. Do you have any interest in him this week?
No, not at all. Especially if you, I mean, I hope you don't own him, but if, you know, there's people stashing Wentz, obviously, but, you know, pick him up. His value is going to be gone soon. There's better quarterback plays out there.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. It's difficult to justify starting him. But I think you can justify starting Nelson Agholor and Zach Ertz. Both of them had 10 targets this past week. You'd expect about the same this week. Do you have any other interests in the Philly passing game?
No, not really. There's not even really many speculative ads out there as far as I'm concerned. You kind of just talked about anybody that's relevant. You know, I think the Eagles offense, especially the passing game, is pretty clear cut. But something I wanted to ask you real quick is, like, what do you think about people holding on to Wentz, man? Like, if you were a guy that held on to Wentz and you probably drafted a guy like Phillip Rivers or Patrick Mahomes to, like, get you through this interim, those guys might end up having better seasons, you think?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see the reason to hold on to Wentz. I guess unless you like need to pick up a running back or wide receiver or something like that. Like, I guess you can hold on to him. It all depends on how much bench room you have. But like, yeah, there are guys like Mahomes, Rivers, even like an Andy Dalton, like might have a better season than Carson Wentz this year. Like, it's not out of the question. So I don't think you need to hold him by any means.
Yeah.
What do you think about Jay Ajayi? Not used at all in the pass game this past week, but he did get 15 carries, got in the end zone twice. Are you rolling him out again this week?
Yeah, I think you got to roll him out, especially with, you know, I mean, Alvin Kamara is way better than Jay Ajayi, but, you know, the Tampa Bay defense, even though in that win, they did not look good at all. One thing I will say on Ajayi, though, going forward, maybe with the way the running back two pool is kind of shaken out, you will. But I don't think that his performance this week one or like overall is very sustainable to be a must play all week. Pretty sure he played like less than half the offensive snaps. On opening night, everyone's watching this game. People are like, if you drafted JJ, shit, Darren Sproles still matters so much. He'll still be on the field a lot. But JJ will be a factor, but you know, I don't think you can trust him as a running back too. I would look to trade Jay Ajayi if I own him, but that's coming from a guy that was really kind of off him in the offseason or the preseason.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, two touchdowns in week one is what gave him the week that he had. Like, it's not like we're looking at a guy who is coming out and getting 18 carries and four targets a week. You know, no targets, 15 carries. It's just as likely that those touchdowns go to Aguilar and Ertz next game, because neither of them got any week one. You know, so if Jay Ajayi doesn't have those two touchdowns, we're viewing him completely different, you know, as you would. I think you're right. You're dead on with that, where he just has such a low floor. It's going to make him difficult to start every single week. But you're probably rolling him out for now.
Yeah. And there's also, sorry, real quick. There's a reason why, like, Corey Clement is still relatively relevant, if that makes sense. I still think the Eagles like him overall. And, you know, if Jay Ajayi gets a little bit banged up or, like, isn't as productive as he was, especially at the goal line in the future, I could still see Corey Clement kind of having some value in this offense. Maybe not fantasy value as much, but definitely enough to, like, chip into Ajayi's value for sure.
Yeah, I absolutely could see that. I mean, this backfield was like a four-way rotation last year. It would make complete sense for me for it to be a three-way rotation this year. So, yeah, Ajayi's the guy to play if you're going to play a Philly running back, but make sure your expectations are set where they should be. His floor is 12 carries for like 27 yards, you know. Yeah. That's what you're looking at. On the Tampa Bay side of the ball, are you buying into Ryan Fitzpatrick? Please tell me you're not.
Well, no. In DFS, maybe, but in season long, it's not something that you should count on at all. I think I'm definitely buying into the fact that Jameis Winston doesn't have to play this year. But I don't think it's worth the gamble. There's a lot safer owns. I'm not going to say plays, because this week, like, it may be, if you're screwed, could make sense, but I don't like it. But there's better owns out there for quarterbacks going forward than Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's not sustainable.
Yeah, I'm very much not about it. I'm also really not about any Tampa Bay running backs. I don't think you should start Peyton Barber at all this week. Do you?
No, just because there's better options. But again, like we kind of spoke about on the last podcast for the week one preview or week two preview, listen to that if you haven't, like I said before. But again, it's just a sheer volume situation. It's not a great matchup, but, you know, like there's Peyton Barber is going to get a lot more carries than running backs in a lot of fantasy lineups this week. So that's the only way that I would justify it. And also, you know, he in a backfield that makes sense to be more of a committee situation, he really took control of it as far as the workload goes. So you can justify it in that sense, but he's a flex guy, and there's a lot of wide receivers that I'd rather start in that flex, is the best way I could kind of say that.
I think that's a good way of looking at it. And the guys behind him, I think you can safely drop. Like, I don't think you need to own Ronald Jones. But let's talk about these wide receivers.
He was a healthy scratch. Like,
just get rid of him. The wide receivers, I think Evans is obviously a go. Behind that, DeSean Jackson has a concussion and a shoulder injury and seems doubtful. Do you buy that Godwin could be a decent start this week that I think you can probably just pull off the waiver wire?
Yeah, and solely because – and also if you were, like, intrigued by DeSean Jackson's week, like, this is probably a blessing in disguise that he's probably not going to play. But I do believe the thought that the wide receiver two of the Buccaneers will have value this year. That is what I believe in. And I think Chris Godwin, whether it's – and if DeSean Jackson's there, it kind of just muddies the situation a little bit more. But I think Chris Godwin definitely has ownership value for sure.
Yeah, I'm very about at least making sure he's owned, and you know, depending on your wide receiver situation, maybe you have some bad matchups, maybe you got some injuries, whatever it may be. I don't think he's the worst start. Who do you got in this game?
I will take Tampa Bay in the over, just because they're the home team.
Philly in the under. I refuse to buy Ryan Fitzpatrick. I refuse.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it. Let's move on to Cleveland at New Orleans. So New Orleans here for the second week in a row is one of the biggest spreads of the week. This week they are -8. Last week they were -9.5, and we saw how that worked out. The over-under here is 50, so we're expecting a decent amount of points. On the Cleveland side of the ball, we'll start in the passing game. Jarvis Landry fucking dominated the targets. He had 15 targets this week. I don't know about you. Like, I was really against him this offseason. He's got to be a must-start, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's fringing, like, wide receiver one PPR league territory just from that target. I mean, it's not going to be that drastic going forward, but like that says something, you know. I mean, and again, I'm sure Vinny, I didn't listen, I'm shamefully, but Vinny and Don probably talked about how shitty and gross the weather was in this game. So like, I don't think you can count on exactly what happened going forward, but like, that's a pretty serious thing with Jarvis Landry and Tyrod arguably maybe the best quarterback he's ever had in his career.
I think you can make that argument.
Yeah, so I definitely am buying into the Jarvis Landry, especially in PPR formats. Yeah, that's about it. That's all I can really say. I don't think any other wide receiver – I think the only other person on that offense that had more than one catch was David Njoku for like three for like 20-something maybe.
Yeah. Yep, that's about right. Njoku did see 7 targets. I mean, it's worth noting that Tyrod threw the ball 40 times. So that's a lot, but Njoku's on the field. He's big and athletic. I don't really mind him this week. Do you think he's an okay starter?
Yeah, I think he's better than like when we talked about Jesse James in the last podcast. I think right. He's a better play than that. I think he's a little bit better of a play than like Austin Hooper. And again, like when we talk about how you can't buy into week one too much, but I think you can buy into the fact that we haven't seen the full potential of this Browns offense yet just because of the slop fest that game was. So I think just the unknown and the potential is definitely gives him a bit of an edge, if that makes sense.
Cool. What do you think about Josh Gordon here? He's had the one catch for a touchdown, and that was it. It was a sexy fucking catch, but.
Yeah, I'm rolling out Josh Gordon still. If you drafted him, you drafted him as your wide receiver 3. You got bailed out by the touchdown. And all you can say is that against this Saints defense, this is a way better situation than you played him against the Steelers. So just fucking do it, dude.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm right there with you. And then what about the running backs? Do you trust any of them?
If I do, I'm trusting Hyde, even in PPR formats, just because I was kind of shocked by Duke Johnson's lack of usage a little bit, if that makes sense. And just because the disparity in the carries with Carlos Hyde was so great. I'd rather not play any of them. I think all 3 of them should still be owned though.
Yeah, I agree. I don't necessarily think Chubb should be owned, but I think Hyde and Duke should definitely be owned. I don't think either one should really be started this week.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think Chubb doesn't have to be owned, but I'm fine with keeping him at the bottom of your bench unless there's someone that you really need out there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's probably about right. On the New Orleans side of the ball, New Orleans put up a ton of points, but it was really only concentrated between 2 guys, or well, I guess the quarterback and 2 guys. So we'll start with Breeze. You know what, actually? Let's move back to Cleveland for 1 second. We didn't talk about Tyrod. Do you think he would start Tyrod this week?
Yes, I definitely think I would. I don't think you have to. I think I would put him, like, I'm not going to, you know, cite any rankings that I actually did, but if I had to guess where he would be, I would probably put him at quarterback, like, 12.
Yeah, that's probably where I would have him as well. You know, we thought this Saints defense was going to be great. They came out and they were awful week one. So, I mean, we'll see what this median actually is or what kind of defense they actually are as the season goes on. But right now, yeah, I'm right there with you. I think Tyrod's an okay start this week. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot about that. Let's go to New Orleans.
But one more point on that is just something feels right about Tyrod playing in a dome, and I feel like I haven't seen it happen enough, and I really want to.
That's an interesting point, and you're right. For some reason, when you said that, I was like, it piqued my interest a lot.
Yeah. With no weather factor whatsoever. He played in Buffalo forever, and you know that game last week was really rough too with that weather. I just kind of want to see him sling it in New Orleans dome.
Yeah, preferably to Josh Gordon, but that's just a pipe dream probably. Anyway, on the New Orleans side of the ball, Drew Brees had a great game week one. I'm right back on him if I drafted him.
Yeah. I mean, I always kind of viewed him as a top 10 guy, but to your point before, I think there's really only 3 guys that you're playing on this offense as good as it is. And it's Kamara, Breeze and Thomas.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, Thomas and Kamara, you know, obviously they're not going to have the entire offense run through them like every single week, but they're going to have a lot of the offense run through them every single week. Like, yeah, these are the two guys. They're both young. They're both spectacular. It's worth noting too, Michael Thomas, they're using him more in the slot than previous years. And if we know anything about the way the NFL is evolving, it's that people in the slot get a shit ton of volume. Michael Thomas ran 40% of his routes out of the slot week one compared to 20% last year. So double the routes. There's a reason he got 17 targets this week. And then Kamara is breaking every single rule we know about fantasy football, and it's about time that we accept it, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, to your point. I mean, you know whose best years were in the slot for the Saints for Drew Brees? Marcus Colston.
Yep.
So that was a thing. The only other thing I'll ask you about is Ted Ginn a thing, dude?
No.
It's not. I mean, he might be better than your last bench wide receiver, especially if you had an injury. But, like I'd feel comfortable having to, like, spot start him on the buys more than a lot of other guys at this point. But I don't think that it's something that needs to be trusted to the world out there.
That's what I was going to say, and you already said it. He's a spot start on the buy until further notice.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to ask you too, because you're probably more intuitive to these sort of facts, but when I was doing my research for this podcast, I saw a lot of people that were like, the Browns need to use Denzel Ward to shadow Michael Thomas. And I was like, is that going to be a thing that people think matters?
I'm not really sure. Like, if I'm the Browns, I'm not moving Denzel Ward around as a shadow cornerback because he's a rookie and you don't want to expose rookies to too much in the NFL. And also, even if they do, like, Michael Thomas is better at wide receiver than Denzel Ward is at cornerback at this point in time.
It's funny because that was a thought of mine and I was like, I don't know my thoughts on this, and I feel like Walsh will be more verbose in his explanation of why it's not a good thing. And that's exactly what you're saying. I asked you that.
Sweet. Also, way to use the word verbose on this podcast.
Yeah. It's been written on a post-it note on my fridge for 3.5 years. So I'm glad I got to do it.
Finally paid off. Yeah. All right. Who you got in this one?
I will go with Cleveland and the under just because that's a fat spread.
I'm going to go Cleveland and the over.
Whoa, all right, I like that.
Lots of Josh Gordon. Just let me have my dream. All right, so let's move on to Arizona at the Rams. The Rams are 12.5-point favorites, 45.5-point over. Arizona, very, very disappointing this past week. They got messed up by the Redskins. Bradford didn't look good. Fitzgerald kind of got his. David Johnson got a touchdown, which was enough for you to get through. But David Johnson didn't get the pass game usage that we kind of expected. And Chase Edmonds got a lot more work than we expected as well, their backup running back. So I guess let's start with David Johnson. Do you buy that this is the new David Johnson, or are they just kind of easing him in after not using him in the preseason?
I don't know. I was kind of happy that he scored. I have no David Johnson shares at all this year, but I was sort of just happy that he scored that touchdown just as like a, oh God, for the people that drafted him, you were correct. But you needed that. I don't know if I'm going to say that it's so much David Johnson as just the Cardinals don't really know what the fuck they're doing, I think, a little bit. And I think that they're trying to get between easing him in and figuring out what that team is, that I think that it's going to kind of be a back-and-forth situation with his value. You got to hope he finds the end zone. But I think that his floor is lower than a lot of the other I would actually argue that his floor might be the lowest now, and I trust this, of all the first-round running backs.
Yeah, I wouldn't – yeah, I guess that's probably fair.
With the exception of Le'Veon Bell, you bastard!
Yeah. No, it's one of those, and the thing that's most worrisome to me is that Arians would use him split out as a wide receiver a lot. Mike McCoy is not doing that so far this year, which – I don't get why, if you're the new coach or the new offensive coordinator coming in, why you wouldn't look at 2016 and be like, that's exactly how we're going to use him. Because because he had 2,000 total yards, you know?
So there's two things for this team that worked, and I'm going to change one of them.
Yeah, it's like it's completely in, like, I don't know if it's the ego of the coaches coming in saying like, I'm going to do my thing. But it's like, why wouldn't you be like, oh, they already invented this wheel. I am just going to rip off this wheel and I'm going to put it on my own car. And now we're going to drive real fast with it. Like, why wouldn't that be what you do?
Yeah. And also, like, be willing to ride or die with that dude. Like, Mike McCoy, if you get fired on, like, overly feeding David Johnson, then, like, just tip your hat and leave, you know?
Yeah, dude. It's, yeah. All right. I'm not going to rant too much about it, but, like, it's difficult. As a guy who invested heavily in David Johnson, it's difficult to watch them not use him as, you know, they really should. That being said, he still got nines in the past game. I don't think it's something that I'm going to worry about too much. I also think Fitzgerald, his performance was pretty encouraging. He had 10 targets, 7 catches, 76 yards. Like, that's fine for me. And you know, they're going to have better games this season. And I like rolling him out every week still.
Yeah, not to like overanalyze right now, but the way I look at David Johnson, like the only reason I'm even bringing this up is to sort of give some sort of insight for people that are a little worried, but like you're always going to play David Johnson, right? But maybe if you're that owner, that's where if you're running back two is Jay Ajayi, and I'm in a league with a guy that is in this situation, where you may try and ship a guy like Jay Ajayi for a more upside guy like Deion Lewis. So when David Johnson has his slips and falters and okay weeks, that you have an upside guy that can salvage that sort of situation in your team construction. That's definitely like way too deep of over analysis, but like that's how you got to think about the situation. That David Johnson may not be your Todd Gurley of this year, but he will be a running back one, and maybe you got to sort of construct your team in a way where when he falls off a little bit, that boom or bust guys can help you out and save you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I completely agree with you. Those are great points. Let's talk, I guess, there's two more guys I want to bring up on the Cardinals. So one is Chase Edmonds. Chase Edmonds is the backup running back. He got way more work than we expected. So Chase Edmonds this past week got 4 carries for 24 yards, 4 targets, 4 catches, 24 yards receiving as well. I think Chase Edmonds should be owned.
Do you think Chase Edmonds should be owned solely by David Johnson owners or –
No, I think anyone. I think he could be picked up by anyone. I think David Johnson owners would be wise to pick him up. But I think even if you're not a David Johnson owner, I think Chase Edmonds like has realistic upside this year.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen so many like Andre Ellington situations where I'm like, this guy could have value on his own. And it's never worked out in the past, even though the team and the coaching is totally different. That I just personally think that there's other guys, like we talked about on the last podcast, Austin Eckler, people like that, that may be more worthwhile. I even think I might rather own Nick Chubb just because he could be a factor back at some point and doesn't have a stud in front of him. But I don't disagree with your thought process on it.
Okay. Nice nice Merrill Hodge terminology there. Factor back. No, that's definitely fair. And then the other guy I want to talk about is Ricky Seals-Jones. I was very high on him going into week one. Only got 3 catches for 19 yards. He did have 6 targets, though. That was 3rd on the team. They also faced the Rams, who just gave up 180 fucking yards to Jared Cook. I'm still in on Ricky Seals-Jones. I'm riding him another week, dude.
Oh, yeah, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't. And again, like we talked in the last podcast about guys like Kyle Rudolph and things like that. I think Ricky Seals-Jones has way more season-long upside than Kyle Rudolph does.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of quantify how like his opportunity a little bit better, on the field for 92% of the Cardinals' offensive snaps. Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't think there's anyone to really talk about. The other wide receivers, Chad Williams and Christian Kirk, haven't really done much yet. So let's move over to the Rams, who I think are fucking easy. You play golf, you play all 3 wide receivers, and you play Todd Gurley.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. Pretty much it. The only thing I'll say again back on your Ricky Seals-Jones comment is the Cardinals are going to be playing down a lot this year. So even more goes to your point of opportunity. But as far as the Rams go, yeah, I mean, I think week in and week out, I don't know what you can expect from all 3 Rams wide receivers as far as who's going to get the 20 points. But I think the opportunity and the situation is enough that they're all worth, at the very least, low wide receiver two, mid wide receiver three values each week.
Yeah, it's gonna fluctuate for sure depending on touchdowns. Like this past week, Brandon Cooks drew like 80 yards of defensive pass interference. Right. Robert Woods got missed on deep passes where he was behind the safety like three times. Like there are a lot of things that can fluctuate week to week with these Rams receivers, but all three of them are going to be playable unless it's like a very specific matchup. They're all going to be playable just about every week.
Yeah, oh yeah. And this is like a digressing gut feeling, but like, you know how in other situations we're like, good luck predicting which, you know, Buccaneers second receiver is going to get the touchdown. I feel like the week that you don't play Robert Woods will be his 25-point week, dude.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The week that you don't play Cooper Kupp is when he catches three touchdowns. Like, that's how that's going
to
go.
Yeah, and we know these guys have the ceilings to do that, too. So it could be potentially frustrating if you're trying to, like, because they were all drafted where they're potential starters every week, but you also probably have other guys who are potential starters based on matchup. So if you own them, you're probably going to have some frustrating weeks with them. You'll probably have some weeks where they win you the week, but it's what you're going to have to deal with.
Yep.
All right. Let's pick this one. I'm going Cardinals over.
Oh, yeah. Who? Cardinals over?
Yeah.
I'm going to go Rams and over as well.
Okay. I'm so invested in the Cardinals. Like, I have a shitload of Fitzgerald, Johnson, and Seals Jones. It's like, I feel like I'm doing that just to kind of like placate my own like pacing mind on that topic. But anyway,
that blows my mind, but that's a side conversation that people don't need to hear.
Yeah. I really shouldn't have invested so heavily in such a bad team. I'm aware of it. It's like one of the biggest panic things like of this season for me. But anyway,
yeah.
Let's move on. We have Detroit at San Francisco. San Francisco here is a 5.5-point favorite. The over under is 48. Jimmy G kind of struggled week one against that Vikings defense. Do you think it continues week two?
I don't know if it continues as drastically, but I think that the week one, even though the Vikings defense is good, is enough to scare me in a sense where I'd rather play Jared Goff. I'd rather play Phillip Rivers. I mean, obviously Patrick Mahomes has way more upside and you know, you can't really equate those two, but I think I'm moving Jimmy G to the bottom of that, you know, third tier of quarterbacks now.
Yeah, for me, he's a play in a very good matchup quarterback. I don't think he's a guy you start in like an okay matchup or a like okay to bad matchup. He's a guy you start against like the Colts or like, you know, the Giants or that kind of thing. He's a guy you start against the team where you say this pass off defense is bad. I'm not really, really about it at all in terms of starting him there. I will say though, I'm very about starting George Kittle.
Yeah. I mean, George Kittle, I think is the safest start on that entire team.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong there. I believe he led the team in targets. Let me just pull this info up real quick.
No, he did. I believe Garcon had 6. I think he had 9, if I'm remembering correctly. I'll say about George, what's that?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. What I'll say about George Kittle is like when we were talking about tight ends before, what happened to me in every league was I had guys like Kyle Rudolph or Jack Doyle. Like I didn't draft a high tight end except for Gronk in one league. In every single one of those leagues, I looked and I was like, I hope George Kittle's on the waiver wire. Like somewhere I had Tyler Eifert and I was like, shit, he's not. And I really want to own that guy. So I view him as a top tight end, I think, going forward for sure. Top 10 tight end. Sorry, I didn't specify.
Yeah, no, I think that's about right. He's a guy who showed a lot of flashes last year, looked good this past week, and we'll see how it sort of moves forward. Now, Marquise Goodwin got hurt. If he started him, that sucks. I'm sorry. He should be back this week, so that kind of throws like a wrench in things because theoretically Pierre Garcon could have been a good start. Trent Taylor could have been a good start. Dante Pettis maybe could have been a good start. Are you buying into any of these 49ers wide receivers this week?
No, I'm not. And what makes me doubt my own opinion right there is that Goodwin, like what people will see is, oh, he got hurt. He only had one target, whatever. I think it was one target, maybe two, but I think one. Mm-hmm. But that target came like, and that injury came, or I can't say when the target came, that injury came like late second quarter. So it wasn't like it happened on the second drive or something like that. And then like, that's why Goodwin's target share wasn't that good. It's like, they weren't really looking at him that much. So while you would want someone in that offense to be intriguing after George Kittle, I feel like Goodwin's presence will, again, just sort of confuse the situation. But I put Goodwin, who I was a little high on preseason with banged up, as like a high-end wide receiver 4, and then the rest of them barely ownable. Garcon, I think, is ownable, but I don't want to play any of them this week.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, Garcon got 6 targets. Taylor got 6 targets. Neither of them really did anything with it. And then the guy who did something was Dante Pettis, who had 5 targets, 2 catches, 61 yards, and a touchdown. And the touchdown was fucking sick. But how do you quantify that he caught a fucking sick touchdown and the guy who would play in front of him is likely coming back this week?
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those where Pettis is interesting to me, maybe as ownable. I'm not playing any of them this week. I'm not playing any of these wide receivers. I don't think it's worth it.
I agree. But theoretically, not even just saying like the average fantasy player, but like even people like us, if Garcon caught that Pettis touchdown, Garcon would be in your lineup this week.
Yeah, 100%.
But it was the fact that the most obscure, like hardest to sell yourself on receiver made the play makes the whole situation even worse to kind of navigate through.
Yeah, like if I knew Dante Pettis was going to get 75% snaps this week, I would be like, yeah, throw him in your lineup, start him, like completely fine. I don't think that's going to happen at all. So it makes it real difficult. In terms of the running backs, they both split time. They were both okay. I mean, we just saw Crowell go nuts on big plays and Powell have an okay game. I don't know. Is there any reason to play Morris or Breda?
I'll say this. I like Breda more solely because Morris, I mean, they pretty much split, but Morris had those pretty rough fumbles at the goal line. Yeah, I mean, Breda, if you're stuck, man, if you're a team that had Le'Veon Bell, not to keep bringing him up, but like if you're a guy that's really strong-armed at running back, it's a really good matchup. We just saw them get run all over. I do think Detroit as a team will be better this week, but that's my own stupid opinion. But yeah, I'd rather not play either, but Breda's the guy that I am if I have to.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that's about right. Let's move to the Detroit side of the ball. They looked fucking awful this past week. Stafford was terrible. I don't think you need to play him. No one in their backfield should be started at this point. But the 3 wide receivers all had a decent amount of targets. I believe Galladay had 12, Tate had 15, and Marvin Jones had 8. I know Jones didn't really do as much with it, but do you think it's okay to start all of them?
Well, first off, I want to ask you this. Which do you think was a worse moment for the animal of a lion? Monday Night Football or when Scar killed Mufasa? Because both were equally rough. When Scar killed Mufasa, that was like a rough moment for the lion population. But I think Monday Night Football rivals it, man. Losing to the Jets, that was rough.
Yeah, particularly after that start. Just like the Darnold pick 6 and just like, oh, the Jets are going to jet. And then it's like, oh, no, the Lions are going to lion real hard right now.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say. As much as it sucks, this is so weird. You see a blowout team get blown out at home, but you're like, I want to start all 3 wide receivers. So I guess I'll kind of narrow it down more and say, I think I'm most confident in Kenny Galladay.
Okay, see, I think I'm most confident in Golden Tate, but okay. I understand that. And my reasoning goes back to like what me and Vinny said last week, was that I think Tate's role is unquestioned in the slot. I think that's like, he has this role that we know he's going to do every week. Whereas I think the guys on the outside catching intermediate to deep throws and catching touchdowns, I think that might bounce back and forth between Galladay and Jones.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll counter that with something that's a lot less something you can't trust as much. But I'll say that like last year when Galladay got the shots that he did and the field time, and the snap count that he did, I was like, that's very interesting that a rookie that's completely unproven and like an end zone threat is getting this sort of workload in a receiving core that has Tate, Ebron, Riddick, like Marvin Jones, all these guys. And the fact that they went right back to it kind of tells me something. And I just pick him over Tate strictly for I think he has a way better chance. I think you'll agree of finding the end zone.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So my thought process is like they really want to get him in this offense, even though the coaching staff is a turnover. I know that. But as an organization as a whole, it was like Galladay was more relevant last year than I thought he deserved to be. And the fact that he was even more so in the opening week and look pretty good is telling to me that he's got a little bit more potential.
That's a good point. And I guess the point to make there is that Tate needs 7+ targets and 7 at the very least to get it done. Galladay can get it done with 4 targets. If they don't throw that much on a certain week, or maybe he's covered, he's still an end zone threat. He's still a guy who they might just throw, you know, jump balls up to in the end zone. So it's,
I'll stand by that and say that, in every single league that I own Kenny Galladay, which is 4, I am starting him in every single one of those leagues.
Wow, that's impressive. You own him in that many. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and one of those leagues, I actually just recently put up 210 points in like a sick showing, and I'm still putting Kenny Galladay in that lineup. Like, it's a good team.
Fuck yeah, dude.
I'm down on Kenny Galladay big time. Well, I should say up, but you know.
Yeah, down with. Know. Up on, down with.
I'm just cool.
Exactly. Anyway, so I think that'll do it for the Lions. Trust Rodgers on Galladay over me. He's very confident. Who do you want in this one?
Yeah, and I'm also very glad you didn't even bring up that backfield. But one thing I want to say about the Lions real quick, I'm sorry, is trust Stafford this week. I still trust Stafford this week. If you own him, you drafted him, I'm rolling him out there still. Niners defense is not good. That secondary is weak. And the Lions just got straight up surprised and outcoached. And I'm rolling Stafford out in the league that I have him in again this week. Sorry, I just want to say that.
You got the hot Lions takes, and I like them, dude. I like them a lot.
Yeah, dude, I'm a Packers fan. Weird, but whatever. So in this game, I am taking the Lions and the over.
I'm going to do the same thing, Lions and the over. All right. And with that, we are going to take a quick break. We'll hear from Auction Draft and we will be right back.
Auction Draft is the ultimate fantasy football auction draft experience. With full season and 5-week seasons available, you get the best of both worlds. It's time to play fantasy football the way it was meant to be played. Visit auctiondraft.net to learn more and save 50% off the 2018 season price with promo code LTFF. We'll see you on the field.
All right, guys, that was Auction Draft. Make sure you are checking them out. Rodgers, let's dive back into these last 4 games. Let's close out week 2 so I can go watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia because they just came out with a new episode. Anyway, New Orleans, not New Orleans. Ooh, good. New England at Jacksonville. New England is a 2-point road favorite. The over-under here is 45. I don't know what the fuck to think about this matchup. Let's start with New England, I guess. I guess you're playing Tom Brady, right?
Yeah, you have to.
All right, so now that we've established that, which of his pass catchers are you playing?
All right, well, this is hard, man. I mean, you got to play Gronk. This is the thing, and you know it if you draft Brady or you draft Gronk, you're riding it all the way. You will never sit them. You can't. And you knew that when you drafted them, so don't even question it. And I don't really think me and Walsh need to give you much analysis on it.
The question that comes in then is, are you playing Chris Hogan after his one catch performance? Can you please tell me, because I don't know whether to play him or not. Is he going to be up against Jalen Ramsey? You got to tell me, dude, I'm panicking.
I think Bill Belichick will be smart enough to get him away from Jalen Ramsey a little bit, but I don't think I don't know. It's the hardest decision I've ever had to make, because you know what I did in my one league where I own Chris Hogan and he's my wide receiver too? I sat him this week for Kenny Galladay.
Oh my God, you fucking genius.
That's what I did. So that is literally the only insight I can give. I wouldn't be shocked if the Patriots work a way to find Chris Hogan a little more shit, but I also wouldn't be surprised if his shit got locked down again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It's tough because, like, Hogan just came off that performance. Dorsett just had 7 targets, 7 catches, 61 yards. Me and Vinny told everyone that picking up Dorsett would be a bad move. Like, I'm kind of flustered on the Patriots. I don't really know what to think. I think I'm going to play Hogan where I have him. And you know, obviously the rest of the pass catchers are what they are. So I get the running backs. Burkhead and White.
Well, I wanted to make a comment on Dorsett. Can I make a comment on Dorsett real quick?
No, yes. Yeah, you can.
Is that I agree with you and Vinny's take overall, especially because, you know, you didn't draft Dorsett and Edelman will be coming back, but he didn't run routes on almost like every single passing down in week one, which kind of is a shocker to me. And like with the sketchy matchup, I really wouldn't be shocked if he would end up being a better play than Hogan. But like if you're the Jaguars, you got to play around. You got to plan around Gronk, right, man? Like that's got to be your total focus.
Yeah. Do you know who lined up in the slot? I don't know.
I don't, but I would guess Dorsett. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know. And our sound quality is bad enough that I don't want to like go searching for it right now. But my thinking would be that whoever's lining up in the slot probably has a decent matchup against DJ Hayden. Cause Boye and Ramsey don't really travel into the slot. So whoever's lining up in the slot and we can like tweet this out or like do something to let you guys know, like that's probably the matchup you want to attack for the Patriots wide receivers.
Yeah. I think the matchup that I want to attack is going to be the guy we're probably going to talk about next, but
James White.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah, dude. I'm expecting James White to be by far and away the highest scoring Patriot in fantasy this week.
Wow. I mean, he did lead the team in targets this past week with 9. So tell me why you're so confident that he's going to be that good this week.
I mean, honestly, I wish I had like something way more analytical to say like, oh, because of like all this shit, but it's strictly just because of the Jaguars secondary. And that is honestly at this point, with the exception of possibly Gronk, I can't really remember the career years or whatever, but the most veteran pass catcher that Tom Brady has as far as experience with him. So with a great secondary and leading the team in targets, I don't see why you would not just dump it off to James White a lot. And if I remember correctly, James White had a really filthy AFC championship against the Jaguars as well that got them to the Super Bowl. So I think that matchup works against the Jaguars a little bit. And I just don't see any reason why you would go against, you know, what has worked for you in the past against really good defenses. I just feel like the receptions will be there. I think he gets like 8 catches. I think he's got at least 8 carries, and I think it translates to some decent yardage as the Jaguars D tries to completely swallow up Gronk and Hogan.
Fair enough. With that being said, what do you think about Burkhead?
Burkhead. I don't think Burkhead showed enough in week one to play him against arguably the worst matchup on the road, if that makes sense, that he will face all year. I think James White's a much better play in standard and PPR. I don't think Burkhead is awful, but when we talked in the past about guys like Lamar Miller, I'd rather play Lamar Miller. I'd rather play Jay Ajayi. And I hate Jay Ajayi, and that's just kind of where I sit right there. And I'd put him above guys on the Niners and things like that, but that's just kind of to give you context of where I kind of rank him.
Okay, that's definitely fair. I think you're about right there. Let's move to the Jacksonville side of the ball. I don't know what the fuck to make of this. Fournette has his hamstring injury. Now we're saying maybe he'll play, maybe he won't. I mean, if he doesn't, I think TJ Yeldon's a great play. But what if he does, you know? And then what if he does, but he's limited and like all these sorts of things? I don't know. What's your opinion here on this backfield? Because I don't know what to think about.
As a Fournette owner, too, and someone that weirdly has owned a lot of Jaguars in fantasy in the past, it's that shitty situation of Fournette. If he goes, you got to play him. I would not be surprised if Fournette is active and TJ Yeldon gets more work. Just again, because I think if you're the Jaguars, and I always delve too deep into this, but you're like, okay, Fournette is banged up. This is a game that we should probably lose. But again, we're a fringe playoff team. So do we want to hurt Fournette again and go all out trying to beat the Patriots in week two? Or should we kind of just see how this game goes, keep our players healthy? And TJ Yeldon has been incredibly effective, not just in week one, but in the past when he's filled in for any Jaguars running back that he's backed up for or was the starter at some points. And You just got to roll Fournette out there. If Fournette is active, I'm hesitant on starting Yeldon, though, even though I think that it's possible he has a better game. Does that make sense? It's kind of contradictory, but do you know where I'm coming from with that? As far as safety?
That definitely makes sense. And I think the ideal scenario, if you're like a Jaguars running back owner, is that Fournette just sits straight out and you're able to start Yeldon. But we'll see what happens there. In terms of the rest of the team, the targets were really split evenly among the wide receivers. I don't know that there's a single one that I'm comfortable starting.
Who is?
I'm sorry?
Which one are you saying you're comfortable to start?
Oh, no. I said I don't think there's a single one.
Okay, yeah. I agree with that. Sorry. I missed you for a second. But now I don't want to touch any Jaguar except for that backfield.
All right, cool. In that case, what are you picking here?
I'm going to take New England in the under.
Yeah, I think I'm doing the same. Let's move on to Oakland at Denver. Denver's a 5.5-point favorite. The over-under is 45.5. Let's start with Oakland. Jared Cook, that's it.
I mean, I still like Amari Cooper. I'm going to roll Amari Cooper out there. I don't feel good about it. I think he's this week a wide receiver 3, but again, I just like the volume potential of him. I think Denver gets up in this game, which I was going to talk about a little bit later. No offense, Walsh. I'm sorry. But I think Denver kind of gets up and they try and figure some shit out as far as what their offense is going to be going forward.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I mean, so first I'll say it's hard for me to have objective opinions about this game because I am so upset about Oakland and the way that they are playing and what they have done to their franchise and all these sorts of things. But Jared Cook makes sense just because the Denver cornerbacks and that sort of thing have been so good. I think Denver is a little bit vulnerable against the tight end. We saw that with Will Disley and Nick Vinette, which if you don't know those names, that's because you didn't pay that much attention week one. Because if you didn't do that, you wouldn't know those names, which is why it makes Jared Cook kind of a play this week. In terms of Cooper, I could see.
And listen, Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
Just listen to Walsh. No, I was saying listen to Walsh, and then you will know those names.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. In terms of Cooper, I could see it. I don't trust it. So it is what it is. I guess talk about the Denver side of the ball. You said they were going to get up, right?
Yeah. I mean, on the Denver side of the ball, the receiving game is kind of exactly what it is year in, year out. Like Thomas, Sanders, both getting good targets, both getting good snaps. It's you can play both of those dudes every single week. I think where you really focus on, unless you have any more pass catchers you want to talk about, is the backfield.
I kind of want to talk about Cortland Sutton.
Yeah, do it, dude.
He's on the field for basically every single snap. He's super talented. He didn't do that much week one, but the Raiders secondary sucks ass. If I were to rank the starts of the three Denver wide receivers, I would say Sanders, Thomas, Sutton, but it's very close between Thomas and Sutton, I think. I think Cortland Sutton might finish this year with more fantasy points than Demaryius Thomas. I think Emmanuel Sanders will lead the team in fantasy points for sure. But I think Sanders, I think, is one of the best starts of the week. And then I think you can start Thomas and Sutton.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I'll take your opinion on that. I just always look at, like, this is a small sample size, but I'm just like, when have either the Broncos or Case Keenum had a third wide receiver that was relevant? Ever in a while. That's just the way I look at it. And I like think of like Jarius Wright in the past, where it was like that dude was like maybe almost relevant on the Vikings, like and shit like that. But I'm just like, I just think Case Keenum is fine sitting with those dudes. Cortland Sutton's a way better talent than the other dudes I'm referencing. But I just don't think there's enough to go around.
That's definitely fair and probably the correct take. But let's move to the backfield here. Royce Freeman, we all thought was going to be the dude, came out, got some carries, didn't get any targets. Philip Lindsay got some targets. He got a touchdown. What do you think about this backfield, man?
Yeah. First off, what the hell, man? I mean, I'll say this, that no one should have expected Royce Freeman to get any targets or being on any like sort of passing work, because that's kind of been the one main knock on him all preseason. But Philip Lindsay, dude, you Colorado native, weed smoking crazy dude, like where are you? That's assumptive. I shouldn't have said that. There's so much Colorado. You guys just, that's just a joke, but whatever. I mean, I trust Freeman way more. And again, no offense, Walsh, but I just think the Broncos kind of get up a little bit more in this game early. And Freeman's obviously the ground and pound guy. So I think this, the way I feel like it's gone in the past is that, you know, the Broncos are going to say like, okay, we've wanted to give this dude the full shot to close out a game. Let's see what Royce Freeman really has, like after that filthy preseason. Let's give him the ball. Let's see if it works. And I just think this is the game where he kind of takes a better share of the workload. I'm not saying that sustains all the way, especially if he doesn't do much with it. But I think this is the game where they kind of have a better handle on it, where they can, you know, run out the clock maybe a little more or manage the game a little better. And this is the shot that they give him to be the bell cow.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't take any offense because I think the Broncos are going to go up. I think the Raiders get gashed by good running backs, and I think Royce Freeman's a good running back when he gets the ball in his hands. So, yeah, I'm on Royce Freeman this week. I think Philip Lindsay is worth owning. I don't think he's worth starting, but he's probably on your waiver wire. So if you have some running back that you don't give a fuck about, just go pick up Philip Lindsay instead. Yeah, that's kind of where I am with that. Like I said, I don't take any fucking offense to the idea that the Raiders are bad. This is the year of sports that has broken my spirit with my team. So I'm going to take the Broncos and the over here because I think the Broncos are going to fucking kill them. But go ahead.
Oh, man. I'm going to take the Broncos and the under. But also, very weirdly, this, I wanted to say something about last week. It was the first time I've ever seen in a box score where Seattle versus Denver – Denver had running back carries split 15 for 71, 15 for 71, and then two carries. And then the Seahawks also had a 7-7-2 split. It was like very identical and symmetrical all the way around. And it made my math loving self really funny.
Nice. I like that. Well, fair enough. Let's move to the Sunday night game. We got
Giants. Yeah, but I like the Broncos.
Oh, sorry. You still there?
Go on.
Sorry, we might have some sound issue, guys.
Giants at Dallas.
Yeah, I apologize for that. It's I think I was kind of behind and whatever else. But anyway, let's move on to the Sunday night game. Giants at Cowboys. There are not many fantasy plays for this. Dallas is a 3-point favorite. The over-under is 42. On the Dallas side, dude, it's just Zeke.
I completely agree. And Zeke, I don't really love that much, man. I hope if I own him, which I don't have any shares, I'm hoping he has a good week. And I think he's another trade bait guy. I don't think he's going to live anywhere up to his ADP. And I think even Zeke owners know that, man. I think if you're a Zeke owner, you crazy bastard, you know what's happening.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, man. It's tough to expect much out of it. I mean, like Zeke's going to do what he's going to do, but that offensive line isn't what it was. In terms of the wide receivers, I know Don and Vinny talked about Cole Beasley being a guy to pick up. He had 8 targets. He had 7 catches. He wasn't on the field for more than 65% of snaps. The Cowboys are running this weird, like 5 wide receiver rotation. You don't need to own any single Cowboys wide receiver. If you're going to own one, it's probably Beasley, but like you don't need to at all. Cause when are you going to want to fucking start a guy who's a little slot receiver getting 65% of the snaps? It's just not something you need to do. And for the foreseeable future, Zeke is the only play for them and he's not even a great play.
Yeah. The only thing that I will say positive on Zeke, and this was like a crazy few articles that I read today while at work, not working, sorry, work, was that so the Cowboys saw a lot less like stacked boxes this week, obviously, because or a lot more stacked boxes, I mean, because the pass game is just really not that good. And apparently, like Jason Garrett has been watching a lot of like Sean McVay film to like try and translate Ezekiel Elliott into a Todd Gurley type like career progression, where he's trying to like run out of the shotgun a lot more, and do a lot of more like fast paced shit. And like, apparently that was something that took Todd Gurley in the Rams. Like, when you have like a more mediocre quarterback and passing game and a less elite O-line, if you will, but like a lot of shotgun and like freaking rollout passes are like something that Jason Garrett's been like looking into trying to do. That's like a small progression of success. I don't really have as much information as I should as I bring up this topic, but like, it's something to keep an eye on, that like, maybe you can ride it out with Zeke. But I have no good feelings about this Cowboys offense going forward at all.
Yeah, no, me neither. I don't think they're going to be a good offense at all. I don't think they're going to be a good team. Let's move to the Giants side. So I think this is pretty easy too. You're playing Saquon and you're playing Odell, and like, I think that's also it. I don't think you need to play Evan Ingram. I don't think you need to own Evan Ingram.
Yeah, no, I there's so much more in that tight end roulette pool that is just as fucking fine. And the only thing I'll say about the Giants is that like, Saquon Barkley got almost 20% of the target share, and that like should not sustain probably going forward. Mm-hmm. But other than that, and that's another reason why I kind of think James White in the, like what we were talking about before, against the page. Like, if Eli's checking down to Saquon Barkley a lot, I just feel like that just is a good another indicative factor of that matchup for James White. But whatever, I'm just so on James White that I'm getting off topic. But yeah, just like, don't count on that a lot. But yeah, Barkley, and you're not playing Eli?
For a second, I was like, wait, what the fuck's he talking about? And then I got it. I got it. Yeah, no, not playing Eli. I would say, like, who are you picking in this one? I honestly have no idea. I'm going to take the under for sure.
Yeah, I want to pick the Lions, but they're not playing in this game.
That's true.
So I'm going to go with the Cowboys in the under just because they're the home team.
Well, just to be different, I'm going to do Giants and under, but, like, okay. I don't fucking know or care who wins that. All right, let's move to the Monday night game, last game of the week, and then we'll let you guys go. We got Seattle at Chicago. Chicago's a 3-point favorite. Would you have guessed that, like, going into the season? Yeah, dude, the over-under is 43 points, so we don't expect much scoring here. But let's start on the Seattle side. Russell Wilson did some things. The running backs kind of split some shit. Will Disley had 103 yards for some reason, even though he was outsnapped by Nick Vinette, their other tight end. And then Tyler Lockett and Brandon Marshall both scored touchdowns.
I just want to stop you. I can't believe you, Harry, that on this podcast or in football, anybody had to say Will Disley got over 100 yards, but he was outsnapped by Nick Vinette.
Yeah, it's like, what a stupid statement.
Factual, but ugh.
Yeah. So what do we think here? Like, against this Bears defense, which is pretty good, like, are we trying to, like, go all out on the Seahawks or not really at all?
Definitely fucking not, dude. I think the intense opposite. So let's just – I'm sure Vinny and Don talk about it, but Baldwin's out for at least a couple weeks.
Yep.
I put Tyler Lockett as a wide receiver 3 and Will Disley as your freaking double zero tight end roulette wheel, dude. It could work. I don't want to trust it, but I don't want to play any single Seahawk otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, no one on the Seahawks had more than 6 targets in week 1. Yeah, man, it's just like an ugly team. Like, you can play Russell Wilson and because he's the entire offense. But like, other than that, like, good fucking luck.
Yeah, one thing I will say is that I think that this may be the first game where Rashad Penny starts to take the reins a little bit. I'd read in a couple articles that Pete Carroll kind of wanted to, you know, ease him into the offense, obviously, with that injury, that finger injury. And him and Chris Carson split the carries. They kind of had Penny did nothing with them, but they kind of had similar days apart from Chris Carson's one, like, 25-yard carry or whatever it was. And the fact that they split – you know, on Penny's first game when he's supposed to be the guy going forward, I think this may be the game where you see a little more disparity between their carry share. But that's just okay. I don't think you'd start him based on that. But I think this is the first domino to fall in Penny taking over that backfield.
Okay, that's fair. I don't really have a strong opinion either way on that. But yeah, I mean, if I'm going to play anyone on the Seahawks this week, it's Tyler Lockett because I think he has the most big play ability. It's about all I got. Mm-hmm. On the Bears side of the ball, Jordan Howard looked great. Tariq Cohen was also pretty involved. What do you think about this backfield?
Yeah, I think that this offense as a whole is going to bounce back a little bit. Cohen kind of got like a little bit of an underwhelming workload based on, you know, if you just looked at the box score. But the game script was really, really against him. And I think that this, it's possible that this is his like worst game of the year usage-wise. In the sense that, you know, Lee, and I'm a snobby Packer fan saying this, but I think the Bears were like, oh, shit, what do we do? Like, we need to run with Jordan Howard and not involve Tariq Cohen as much. And I just don't think the Bears are going to be in a game script like that very often this entire year. Not saying they'll be so bad, but I think that, you know, things will play out that Cohen needs to get a lot more usage. I think he only got like 9 touches, something like that. Is that correct?
Yep. 8 touches.
8 touches, yeah, some of that's there. But I think that may be his lowest total of the year. I think I'm comfortable rolling both these guys out this week.
Okay, yeah, I'm definitely comfortable with Howard. Cohen, I'm a little bit less comfortable, but I don't think it's the worst start you could make. Outside of that, I mean, I guess you could play Allen Robinson. And the guy that I'm definitely still in on is Trey Burton. I know he was very underwhelming, 1 catch for 15 yards. He still had 6 targets. He was still on the field constantly. I think Trey Burton, if you drafted him, you roll him out again, you keep it going.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But there, since it's the last game of the week too, Walsh, and I can't get through two full my first podcast without saying it, I think the Bears defense is a great own for the rest of the year going forward. And that you can roll that out this week as well with a home game against the Seahawks. Pick up that Bears team.
Wow. Wow. Never thought I was going to hear that.
But it's true.
I guess I don't think you're wrong. But I guess we'll leave it at that for the week, right? I feel like that's the only way to end this.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. I think that'll probably do it. We got through all the games. I apologize. I hope the sound quality is okay. I don't know how this is going to turn out. My internet's been fucking sketchy the entire night. So hopefully the
I think for the most part it's okay, Walsh.
What's up?
I think for the most part it's okay.
All right.
There was some slow, but you came back hot, and you know, the people know that it's all about quantity, not quality at Let's Talk Fantasy Football.
Yeah, we're about the goddamn content. We're gonna give you as much as possible, and it's gonna all suck. We hope you guys enjoyed this, the week 2 preview. We hope you enjoyed Rodgers coming back. Rodgers, do you have anything to leave the people with before we
clear? No, man. It completely sucks being back. That's pretty much about it. And go Kenny Golladay and the Lions, even though I'm a Packers fan. But
there you go. Rodgers likes the Bears defense and Kenny Golladay. Take it to the bank. All right, guys. Well, it's been a lot of fun tonight. I have had probably a few too many Labatt Blues. We'll talk to you guys next week. And for Rodgers, I am Walsh. Later, podcast.
This has been Let's Talk Fantasy Football. Thanks for listening.